masters cannot find them or open them if their secret is forgotten.
But this door was not made to be a secret known only to dwarves, said Gandalf, coming suddenly to life and turning round.
Unless things are altogether changed, eyes that know what to look for may discover the signs.
He walked forward to the wall. Right between the shadow of the trees, there was a smooth space, and over this he passed his hands to and fro, muttering words under his breath. Then he stepped back.
Look, he said. Can you see anything now?
The moon now shone upon the grey face of the rock, but they could see nothing else for a while. Then slowly on the surface, where the wizard's hands had passed, faint lines appeared, like slender veins of silver running in the stone. At first they were no more than pale gossamer threads, so fine that they only twinkled fitfully where the moon caught them. But steadily they grew broader and clearer, until their design could be guessed. At the top, as high as Gandalf could reach, was an arch of interlacing letters in an elvish character. Below, though the threads were in places blurred or broken, the outline could be seen of an anvil and a hammer surmounted by a crown with seven stars. Beneath these again were two trees, each bearing crescent moons. More clearly than all else, there shone forth in the middle of the door a single star with many rays.
There are the emblems of Durin, cried Gimli.
And there is the tree of the High Elves, said Legolas.
And the star of the House of Feanor, said Gandalf. They are wrought of Ithildan that mirrors only starlight and moonlight, and sleeps until it is touched by one who speaks words now long forgotten in Middle-earth. It is long since I heard them, and I thought deeply before I could recall them to my mind.
What does the writing say? Asked Frodo, who was trying to decipher the inscription on the arch. I thought I knew the elf letters, but I can't read these.
The words are in the elven tongue of the west of Middle-earth in the elder days, answered Gandalf. But they do not say anything of importance to us. They say only, the doors of Durin, Lord of Moria, speak, friend, and enter. And underneath, small and faint, is written, I, Narvi, made them. Celebrimbor of Holland drew these signs.
What does it mean by speak, friend, and enter? Asked Merry.
That is plain enough, said Gimli. If you are a friend, speak the password, and the doors will open, and you can enter.
Yes, said Gandalf.
These doors are probably governed by words. Some dwarf gates will open only at special times or for particular persons, and some have locks and keys that are still needed when all necessary times and words are known. These doors have no key. In the days of Durin, they were not secret. They usually stood open, and door wards sat here. But if they were shut, any who knew the opening word could speak it and pass in. At least, so it is recorded, is it not, Gimli?
It is, said the dwarf. But what the word was is not remembered. Narvi and his craft and all his kindred have vanished from the earth.
But do not you know the word, Gandalf?
Asked Boromir in surprise.
No, said the wizard.
The others looked dismayed. Only Aragorn, who knew Gandalf well, remained silent and unmoved.
Then what was the use of bringing us to this accursed spot? Cried Boromir, glancing back with a shudder at the dark water. You told us that you had passed through the mines. How could that be, if you did not know how to enter?
The answer to your first question, Boromir, said the wizard, is that I do not know the word yet. But we shall soon see.
And, he added, with a glint in his eyes under their bristling brows,
you may ask what is the use of my deeds when they are proved useless. As for your other question, do you doubt my tale, or have you no wits left? I did not enter this way. I came from the east. If you wish to know, I will tell you that these doors open outwards. From the inside, you may thrust them open with your hands. From the outside, nothing will move them save the spell of command. They cannot be forced inwards.
"What are you going to do then?" asked Pippin, undaunted by the wizard's bristling brows.
"Knock on the doors with your head, Peregrine Took," said Gandalf. "But if that does not shatter them, and I am allowed a little peace from foolish questions, I will seek for the opening words. I once knew every spell in all the tongues of elves or men or orcs that was ever used for such a purpose. I can still remember 10 score of them without searching in my mind, but only a few trials, I think, will be needed, and I shall not have to call on Gimli for words of the secret dwarf tongue that they teach to none. The opening words were elvish, like the writing on the arch. That seems certain." He stepped up to the rock again, and lightly touched with his staff the silver star in the middle beneath the sign of the anvil.
"Anonethelen edro hiamen, fenas nagothrem lasto bethlamen," he said in a commanding voice.
The silver lines faded, but the blank grey stone did not stir. Many times he repeated these words in different order, or varied them. Then he tried other spells, one after another, speaking now faster and louder, now soft and slow. Then he spoke many single words of elvish speech. Nothing happened. The cliff towered into the night. The countless stars were kindled, the wind blew cold, and the doors stood fast. Again Gandalf approached the wall, and lifting up his arms, he spoke in tones of command and rising wrath.
"Edro, Edro," he cried, and struck the rock with his staff. "Open, open," he shouted, and followed it with the same command in every language that had ever been spoken in the west of Middle-earth.
Then he threw his staff on the ground and sat down in silence. At that moment, from far off, the wind bore to their listening ears the howling of wolves. Bill the pony started in fear, and Sam sprang to his side and whispered softly to him.
"Do not let him run away," said Boromir. "It seems that we shall need him still, if the wolves do not find us. How I hate this foul pool!"
He stooped, and picking up a large stone, he cast it far into the dark water. The stone vanished with a soft slap, but at the same instant there was a swish and a bubble. Great rippling rings formed on the surface out beyond where the stone had fallen, and they moved slowly towards the foot of the cliff.
"Why did you do that, Boromir?" said Frodo. "I hate this place too, and I'm afraid. I don't know of what, not of wolves, or the dark behind the doors, but of something else. I'm afraid of the pool. Don't disturb it."
"Oh, I wish we could get away," said Merry.
"Why doesn't Gandalf do something quick?" said Pippin.
Gandalf took no notice of them. He sat with his head bowed, either in despair or in anxious thought. The mournful howling of the wolves was heard again. The ripples on the water grew and came closer. Some were already lapping on the shore. With a suddenness that startled them all, the wizard sprang to his feet. He was laughing.
"I have it," he cried. "Of course, of course. Absurdly simple, like most riddles when you see the answer."
Picking up his staff, he stood before the rock and said in a clear voice, "Melon!" The star shone out briefly and faded again. Then silently a great doorway was outlined, though not a crack or joint had been visible before. Slowly it divided in the middle and swung outwards inch by inch until both doors lay back against the wall. Through the opening a shadowy stair could be seen climbing steeply up, but beyond the lower steps the darkness was deeper than the night. The company stared in wonder.
"I was wrong after all," said Gandalf, "and Gimli too. Merry, of all people, was on the right track. The opening word was inscribed on the archway all the time. The translation should have been, say, friend, and enter. I had only to speak the elvish word for friend, and the doors opened. Quite simple. Too simple for a learned law master in these suspicious days. Those were happier times. Now let us go."
He strode forward and set his foot on the lowest step. But at that moment several things happened.
Frodo felt something seize him by the ankle, and he fell with a cry. Bill the pony gave a wild neigh of fear, and turned tail and dashed away along the lakeside into the darkness. Sam leapt after him, and then, hearing Frodo's cry, he ran back again, weeping and cursing. The others swung around and saw the waters of the lake seething, as if a host of snakes were swimming up from the southern end.
Out from the water a long, sinuous tentacle had crawled. It was pale green and luminous and wet. Its fingered end had hold of Frodo's foot and was dragging him into the water. Sam, on his knees, was now slashing at it with a knife. The arm let go of Frodo, and Sam pulled him away, crying out for help. 20 other arms came rippling out. The dark water boiled, and there was a hideous stench.
"Into the gateway! Up the stairs! Quick!"
shouted Gandalf, leaping back, rousing them from the horror that seemed to have rooted all but Sam to the ground where they stood. He drove them forward. They were just in time. Sam and Frodo were only a few steps up, and Gandalf had just begun to climb when the groping tentacles writhed across the narrow shore and fingered the cliff wall and the doors. One came wriggling over the threshold, glistening in the starlight. Gandalf turned and paused.
If he was considering what word would close the gate again from within, there was no need. Many coiling arms seized the doors on either side, and with a horrible strength swung them round. With a shattering echo they slammed, and all light was lost. A noise of rending and crashing came dully through the ponderous stone. Sam, clinging to Frodo's arm, collapsed on a step in the black darkness.
"Poor old Bill," he said in a choking voice. "Poor old Bill! Wolves and snakes, but the snakes were too much for him. I had to choose, Mr. Frodo. I had to come with you."
They heard Gandalf go back down the steps and thrust his staff against the doors. There was a quiver in the stone and the stairs trembled, but the doors did not open.
"Well, well," said the wizard. "The passage is blocked behind us now, and there is only one way out, on the other side of the mountains. I fear from the sounds that boulders have been piled up and the trees uprooted and thrown across the gate. I'm sorry, for the trees were beautiful and had stood so long."
"I felt something horrible was near from the moment that my foot first touched the water," said Frodo. "What was the thing, or were there many of them?"
"I don't know," answered Gandalf, "but the arms were all guided by one purpose. Something has crept, or has been driven out of dark waters under the mountains. There are older and fouler things than orcs in the deep places of the world." He did not speak aloud his thought that whatever it was that dwelt in the lake, it had seized on Frodo first among all the company. Boromir muttered under his breath, but the echoing stone magnified the sound to a hoarse whisper that all could hear.
"In the deep places of the world, and thither we are going against my wish. Who will lead us now in this deadly dark?"
"I will," said Gandalf, "and Gimli shall walk with me. Follow my staff."
As the wizard passed on ahead and up the great steps, he held his staff aloft, and from its tip there came a faint radiance. The wide stairway was sound and undamaged. 200 steps they counted, broad and shallow, and at the top they found an arched passage with a level floor leading on into the dark.
"Let us sit and rest and have something to eat here on the landing, since we can't find a dining room," said Frodo. He had begun to shake off the terror of the clutching arm, and suddenly he felt extremely hungry. The proposal was welcomed by all, and they sat down on the upper steps, dim figures in the gloom. After they had eaten, Gandalf gave them each a third sip of the Mirovor of Rivendell.
"It will not last much longer, I'm afraid," he said, "but I think we need it after that horror at the gate, and unless we have great luck, we shall need all that is left before we see the other side. Go carefully with the water, too.
There are many streams and wells in the mines, but they should not be touched. We may not have a chance of filling our skins and bottles till we come down into Dimrill Dale.
How long is that going to take us? Asked Frodo.
I cannot say, answered Gandalf. It depends on many chances. But going straight, without mishap or losing our way, we shall take 3 or 4 marches, I expect. It cannot be less than 40 miles from West Door to East Gate in a direct line, and the road may wind much. After only a brief rest, they started on their way again. All were eager to get the journey over as quickly as possible, and were willing, tired as they were, to go on marching still for several hours. Gandalf walked in front as before. In his left hand, he held up his glimmering staff, the light of which just showed the ground before his feet. In his right, he held his sword, Glamdring. Behind him came Gimli, his eyes glinting in the dim light as he turned his head from side to side. Behind the dwarf walked Frodo, and he had drawn the short sword, Sting. No gleam came from the blades of Sting or of Glamdring, and that was some comfort, for being the work of elvish smiths in the elder days, these swords shone with a cold light, if any orc were near at hand. Behind Frodo went Sam, and after him Legolas, and the young hobbits, and Boromir. In the dark at the rear, grim and silent, walked Aragorn. The passage twisted round a few turns, and then began to descend. It went steadily down for a long while before it became level once again. The air grew hot and stifling, but it was not foul, and at times they felt currents of cooler air upon their faces, issuing from half-guessed openings in the walls. There were many of these. In the pale ray of the wizard's staff, Frodo caught glimpses of stairs and arches, and of other passages and tunnels sloping up, or running steeply down, or opening blankly dark on either side. It was bewildering beyond hope of remembering. Gimli aided Gandalf very little, except by his stout courage. At least he was not, as were most of the others, troubled by the mere darkness in itself. Often the wizard consulted him at points where the choice of way was doubtful. But it was always Gandalf who had the final word. The mines of Moria were vast and intricate beyond the imagination of Gimli, Glóin's son, dwarf of the mountain race though he was. To Gandalf, the far-off memories of a journey long before were now of little help. But even in the gloom and despite all windings of the road, he knew whither he wished to go, and he did not falter as long as there was a path that led towards his goal.
"Don't be afraid," said Aragorn.
There was a pause longer than usual, and Gandalf and Gimli were whispering together. The others were crowded behind, waiting anxiously.
"Don't be afraid. I've been with him on many a journey, if never on one so dark. And there are tales of Rivendell of greater deeds of his than any that I have seen. He will not go astray, if there is any path to find. He has led us in here against our fears, but he'll lead us out again, at whatever cost to himself. He's surer of finding the way home in a blind night than the cats of Queen Baruthiel." It was well for the company that they had such a guide. They had no fuel nor any means of making torches. In the desperate scramble at the doors, many things had been left behind, but without any light they would soon have come to grief. There were not only many roads to choose from, there were also in many places holes and pitfalls and dark wells beside the path in which their passing feet echoed. There were fissures and chasms in the walls and floors, and every now and then a crack would open right before their feet. The widest was more than 7 feet across, and it was long before Pippin could summon enough courage to leap over the dreadful gap. The noise of churning water came up from far below, as if some great mill wheel was turning in the depths. "Rope," muttered Sam. "I knew I'd want it if I hadn't got it." As these dangers became more frequent, their march became slower.
Already they seemed to have been tramping on endlessly to the mountain's roots.